Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's Your Call, we are kicking off a week-long series on San Francisco's homeless crisis. And today, we are live from St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin. Since 1950, St. Anthony's has provided food and assistance to homeless and low-income people in San Francisco. It serves 2,400 hot meals every day. It also provides free clothing, a medical clinic, and a substance abuse recovery program. Demand for services here is on the rise, and St. Anthony's client base is changing. It's becoming older, more isolated, and female. San Francisco's last official count in 2015 put the number of the adult homeless population at 6,686, but advocates in the city say the number is much higher. So who are the homeless in San Francisco? What changes are we seeing? San Francisco is one of the wealthiest and most expensive cities in the country. So why is this crisis getting worse? And what are real solutions, not Band-Aids? Today, we are joined by four guests. Lydia Branston is the dining room manager here at St. Anthony's, and she has been here for 10 years. Hi, Lydia. Thank you for having us today.
Thank you so much.
We're also joined by Sky Weber. Sky is a resident at Father Alfred's. That's a long-term residential men's program. Sky is in recovery. He has been clean for 11 months, and he is working at St. Anthony's. In fact, right after the show, he's going to go downstairs and serve meals. Thank you for coming in, Sky.
Thank you, Rose. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you. And we're also joined here by Barbara Coleman. Barbara lives here in the Tenderloin. She does outreach for homeless people in the area. She's a retired nurse, formerly homeless, and she's also an outreach specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. Barbara has been on the show a few times. It's great to see you, Barbara, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Rose, for having me.
So, Lydia, you have been here at St. Anthony's for 10 years. We are in a room right now overlooking the Tenderloin. People are walking. I mean, there's so much activity in this neighborhood. I want to ask you first about this effort by about 70 media organizations. It's an unprecedented effort. They're coming together this Wednesday and some of them all week to cover this crisis. What are you hoping comes from this coverage?
I'm hoping that one of the things that comes from this coverage is being able to really talk about some of the folks who are on the fringe. I think that oftentimes when we talk about homelessness, we look at specific individuals or issues that are happening, and there are people who are within the homeless community who, because of extreme mental health and or substance abuse issues, IV drug users who are living on the street, mm-hmm. who often get sort of pushed to the side or considered to be the folks who are hopeless or not people that we're willing to engage. Sometimes it's hard to engage them because of their mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So I think that having so much attention, it gives an opportunity to really see the whole picture, I'm hoping.
When you're talking about people on the fringe in San Francisco, what kinds of services are available?
Well, that's what's complicated, right? So when you talk about people who have such extreme mental health issues that they become unsafe to come in and use services or to access services, what options do they have? The interventions are often interventions that happen through the criminal justice system with the police. Even within the criminal justice system, there isn't adequate services to provide stability for these folks. So the question is, you know, how do we engage folks? And it's a very complicated issue. People refuse services because of mental health or are unsafe to access services within the nonprofit system.
There are a lot of changes happening. We'll talk about that throughout the show. Are you seeing more people on the streets with acute mental health problems? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. There's no question that we're seeing more people on the street with acute mental health problems, and I would say many more women I'm seeing on the street with acute mental health, and it gets worse every day that they're on the street because the life is so hard, you know, that it's compounded.
Barbara, how long have you lived in the Tenderloin?
I've been living in Tonawanda about 15 years now.
And you're formerly homeless, and now you advocate for the homeless. You're also a specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. Mm-hmm. You were shaking your head the entire time that Lydia was talking. So give us a sense. You live in this neighborhood. You're part of this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Talk specifically about the people you encounter with acute mental health problems.
Well, when we go out to do our outreach, we usually go where they, you know, the shelters put everyone out about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning so they could, you know, clean up and all that, and they don't have nowhere to go. So they use the self-help centers that have a drop-in center. And I goes into the drop-in centers like Tom Waddell next door to him. I goes to a hospitality house all over the city, because we done reached out a little further than the Tenderloin now that we see it, so, you know, it's needed. And what we do is I approach people on a level that I would like to be approached by. I if I'm going to give a presentation on who I am and what I'm doing, I always have something to give, because I know that's how you can get someone's attention, you know, from a listening perspective. And when I do that, I just say, well, I'm going to have a gift at the end of this presentation after telling you, and it don't be about 5 or 6 minutes that I'm talking. So, you know, they're looking forward to that.
Right. Mm-hmm. What explains the rise in women? St. Anthony's did a survey of users and mm-hmm. found that the proportion of women who come here to St. Anthony's to get food or clothing or services, for example, has gone up from 12% in 2011 to 26% in 2015. So, Lydia, what explains that?
I'm not sure that I have an explanation for it. You know, my work is working on the ground with the folks. I'm often sort of in the trenches, working in the dining room. So it's an experiential it's experiential what I can offer to the conversation. I would say that women's services are very, you know, are difficult to access. I think women often are not part of the narrative of homelessness, you know, and so often they are put onto sort of the fringes or the back pages. When we think of, if you were to think of who is a homeless person and you were to close your eyes and to imagine that person, rarely does the image of a woman appear. Women have really difficult, and it's, you know, it's a very difficult place to be on the street for anybody. Mm-hmm. I would say that as a woman on the street, there are challenges that are even more difficult. And so oftentimes they suffer greatly.
Advocates, Sky, did you want to jump in?
The thing that I see at St. Anthony's is safety. Mm-hmm. It's a safe place for women to come, and there's so many things that St. Anthony's offers women and children. Mm-hmm. So single mothers are able to come in with small children. They have a food giveaway during the week that you see all the mothers and older women coming into, mm-hmm. And also the clothing. Men feel safe on the street. A man can walk down the street and be okay. A man can sleep on the street. A woman can't do that. Mm-hmm. A woman can't sit on the curb. Where's she going to go? So this is a safe place to come to.
Because advocates say that as a woman on the street, you're almost guaranteed to be assaulted.
I would say that I think assault is pretty much a typical event that happens. I mean, it's really a horrible tragedy, and it's like when I talked about the compounding of mental health, is you imagine that you end up on the street because of substance abuse issues or you lose your job, and then you're subjected to the trauma of living on the street, assaults and the lack of safety, and it's really a war zone. You know, and so I would say that, you know, when we talk about PTSD or people having like really severe trauma from having lived on the street, women are at the epicenter of that.
Lydia Branston is the dining room manager here at St. Anthony's. We are live today at St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin. It's our first day of our week-long series on San Francisco's homeless crisis. You may have heard that 70 news organizations will come together for an unprecedented day of homeless coverage on Wednesday. We're going to tackle this issue all week, and today we're live at St. Anthony's. We're also joined here by Barbara Coleman. She lives in the neighborhood. She's formerly homeless. She now advocates for the homeless in the Tenderloin. She's fighting for things like more lighting, streets that are more hospitable, especially to older homeless people. Mm-hmm. She's also an outreach specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. And Sky Weber is a resident at Father Alfred's. That's a long-term residential men's program. Sky is in recovery. He's been clean for 11 months, and he also works here at St. Anthony's. We'd love to hear from you. Today we're taking your emails, feedback@yourcallradio.org. This issue is getting so much attention in the Bay Area. What questions do you have for our guests? What are your opinions on this? We also want to talk about real solutions, not just Band-Aids. feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also tweet us at yourcallradio. So for people who are seeing, we all see it every day. At BART, there are so many more people sleeping in the BART station, mm-hmm. People in neighborhoods. It's everybody's talking about this issue. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't know about the realities of being homeless. Barbara, can you talk about what the everyday realities are of people who are in this neighborhood?
Well, for myself, first you have to come to the realization that you are homeless. Because I don't think a lot of people think just because they have a sister or a brother that lives in the B.B. Hunters Point or the Mission or anywhere else in San Francisco, that it's always about you. You was just one of the people that got caught up, maybe in the family or something like that. And then you decided one day, I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm going to go off and find my own way and see, can I get some help? And that's kind of the way that it goes. I mean, you know, you have to say to yourself, what is my next thing? I don't left my family. What is my next thing? I don't have nowhere to sleep tonight. So you have to go find you a kind of safe place. And first, you got to get that little thing off of your shoulder telling you, oh, I had this job at San Francisco General, and now I don't have it anymore. What are people going to think about me? You know, and you done lost this good job, you know, and there it is. I mean, you know, you get over that. But it's the thing about you see people walk. I don't want to just walk around. That's what I was thinking. I didn't want to just walk around all day to think about I'm in this bad situation. The situation going on, you got to do something about it. You got to take the initiative.
And Barbara, how did you end up homeless?
Well, I came from New Orleans, Louisiana. I had a certified nursing assistant certificate already. And I just thought maybe I could come out here and do a little better. So when I arrived here, my sister had an apartment, and it was in the San Francisco Housing Projects. And I was there for about a couple of weeks before, you know, family conflict came into play, and I had to leave. Because I wasn't the first of it, I wasn't on the lease. And she didn't tell me how it worked, so I couldn't, you know, maneuver just being here 2 or 3 days. Because I came on a weekend, and everything was fine, dude, Saturday and Sunday. But when Monday morning come, it was a different story, you know. And so I just got on me a bus, and I came downtown not knowing anything about San Francisco, just got on the bus, and when I got downtown, a lady told me, he said, what you doing? You just walking around. And then it wasn't quite as many homeless then in the 70s as it is now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people was still talking and reaching out to people that just came here. Mm-hmm. So when I talked to this lady, she told me about St. Anthony Foundation. Now, here I am, this is the North Market, and my sister lives South of Market. Why didn't she tell me about St. Anthony? You know, so I wouldn't have to go through all these, you know, walk and find a place and ask people where is this and where is that. Because being homeless, I didn't think about it as being homeless. I didn't know that it had. We didn't hear the word homeless in Louisiana. So I don't know what homeless is. I'm just thinking people came in to visit. They liked it. They stayed here. That's what I was thinking. You know, and I think a lot of people that come here say, oh, I'll go back, you know, home, you know, after them being here. But then they get here, it's something like, you know, a wonder to a lot of people. San Francisco is a beautiful city, and if you walk around in it, you can walk over it about 2 or 3 hours. You'll be there.
Lydia, the people that you meet here at St. Anthony's, mm-hmm. It's hard to know, but do a large chunk of people come from other cities?
You know, this is one of those things that people say about homelessness in San Francisco, that homelessness in San Francisco is based on sort of the honeypot effect of services, and therefore we attract a lot of folks. And I think San Francisco attracts people, whether they're tech workers mm-hmm. Or people looking for a better life. Mm-hmm. This has always been a boom and bust city. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a fair amount of people who come here looking for something better mm-hmm. And arrive here and have the experience of the fact that there is very little housing. Housing is very expensive. Jobs are filled through computers out of state. It's not as easy to get by here, and so they find themselves in a difficult situation. I don't have the experience. It's not my experience that people come here because they're homeless looking for homeless services. My experience is that people come here looking for a better life and find that they're not making it. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of residents of San Francisco who have been here for generations mm-hmm. who find themselves homeless. And with the housing being what it is today and the job market, it's really difficult to get by here. We have more and more families who are living out of cars, more and more families who are coming in. And again, when we talk about women and families and the rise of homelessness with women and families, it really is around housing. That's the crisis that is pushing people into their cars and onto the street.
Lydia Branston is the dining room manager here at St. Anthony's. We are live here at St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin. St. Anthony's started in 1950. They serve 2,400 hot meals every day. They've got a free clothing program, medical clinic, substance abuse recovery program. Demand for services here at St. Anthony's is on the rise, and the client base is becoming older, more isolated, and female. We're also joined today by Barbara Coleman. She lives here in the Tenderloin, advocates for the homeless. She's an outreach specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. And Skye Weber is a resident at Father Alfred's, a long-term residential men's program. Skye, let's talk about your story. You were a successful businessman in Hawaii. You owned 5 retail jewelry stores. Tell us about your story. You've been clean now for 11 months.
Well, as Lydia was saying, I'm one of the examples of people that came to the city for recovery, specifically why I came here. I've been here in the past just on vacations, but I never realized that I'd wind up in San Francisco to find sobriety. Hmm. But that's what led me here. I've been in the city for 6 years now, and it has been a rough 6 years of finding my sobriety, finding those 11 months. It's taken me 6 years to do that. But as you said, I was a successful businessman, but one of the things I learned along with business was drinking. I became the 2-martini-a-day drinker for lunch and then more at dinner and continuing. That went on for a number of years and got heavier and heavier till climates changed. I wound up losing my business, lost my marriage, but I hung on to the one friend that I'd gained all that time, which was alcohol. And around the age of 40, I became a full-blown alcoholic and spent the next 18 years bouncing around in different jobs, different relationships, living in different areas of the world. Finally wound up in Napa for 13 years. Very unsuccessful. Wound up working in a gas station. Nothing against that, but wound up in a gas station working on a graveyard shift for $9 an hour. This is the same guy that had the successful business in Hawaii. But that's the road that alcohol led me on. But luckily enough, about 6 years ago, a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous said, you know, you're going to kill yourself if you keep this up. You need some recovery. And that's what brought me to San Francisco. And to give an example, and I like to let people know about this, because recovery is not something where you drink for 35 years and one day all of a sudden you say, oh, I'm going to stop. If you drank that long and that heavily and it is in your system and you do carry the disease of it, it's something you live with the rest of your life. So that's why it's taken me so long to get where I am now.
Before the show, we were talking about your journey, and you're still getting help right now to figure out what caused you to turn to alcohol. Have you come up with any answers?
Being around it now for 6 years and seeing so many men go through it, there's so many different examples of why men become addicted to drugs or alcohol. It's almost impossible to pinpoint exactly. If there's one word that I would say that narrows it down, it's fear. Fear of success, fear of failure, fear you're going to be found out that you're doing something that you don't really know what you're doing, but you're doing it anyway, and you're going to be discovered. I don't know that those are the exact reasons, but something along the line, and then in your system, your makeup, your DNA, I don't know if it's genetic or not, but add all that together and then pour a bunch of alcohol on top of it for a long time, and that's where I wound up.
At what point did you decide to seek help, and how did you find it?
As I said, I'd really reached a bottom. I was bouncing around from, I was couch surfing, living out of my truck on and off, and a friend in AA said, he saw how bad off I was and said, Sky, you're going to kill yourself if you keep this up. And he suggested I come into rehab. So I went through the Salvation Army, went through their program here, went through another program on 6th Street, which is part of the Tenderloin, called City Team. I've done Kaiser Outreach. So I've done all the things that you can do to lead up to it. Finally, in desperation, I was actually sleeping on the street. Luckily for only a couple of weeks, but I realized something had to change, that I was finding a bottom I'd never found before.
What was that experience like?
It's more a personal image. The last night that I was out on the street, I remember sticking my head inside of a cardboard box because of the wind, how cold it was. And I remember leaning over in the middle of the night, unable to sleep, and looking at my hand and realizing my flesh was laying on the concrete on the street, and just thinking that, you know, in alcoholism they talk about bottoms, reaching your bottom. And I thought, this has got to be it. This is the concrete. This is as low as I can get unless I dig a hole. And the next day I was at St. Anthony's talking to Miss Raynette, our intake counselor here, and she said, are you ready to go? And I said, yes, I am.
That is Sky Weber. He's here with us at St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin. He is now a resident at Father Alfred's, clean for 11 months. Mm-hmm. And after this show, Sky's going to go downstairs and serve meals. St. Anthony's provides 2,400 hot meals every day. We're also joined by Lydia Branston, the dining room manager here. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Colleen Rivica, policy expert and St. Anthony's advocacy program lead. And we're joined by Barbara Coleman. She lives here in the Tenderloin, formerly homeless. She now advocates for the homeless, and she's an outreach specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. This is Your Call, and we are live from St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call here on 91.7 KALW. For technical and logistical reasons, we aren't taking phone calls today. However, you can still take part in today's conversation by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Today, a sometimes heartbreaking listen-in on prisons in the United States. That's Reveal, 1/2 hour from now, right after your call, here on 91.7 KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this week we are doing a special week-long series on the homeless crisis here in San Francisco. Today we are live at St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin. Tomorrow we will be live from Larkin Street Youth Services, also in the Tenderloin, talking about youth homelessness. On Wednesday, we'll be talking with advocates about how we got here and solutions. On Thursday, we will open the lines to take your questions for Jeff Kasitsky. He is the new head of San Francisco's Department of Homelessness. And today we are taking your emails and your tweets. If you have any questions for our guests, if you'd like to talk about your personal story, if you want to talk about what you see on the streets every day in San Francisco, the frustration that you're feeling, the solutions that you'd like to see, you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also tweet @yourcallradio. If you work with the homeless and you'd like to talk about the changes you're seeing, why we're seeing such an increase, we'd love to hear from you. Today we're joined by Lydia Branston, dining room manager here at St. Anthony's. We're joined by Barbara Coleman. She lives here in the Tenderloin. She advocates for the homeless. She's an outreach specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. And we're joined by Skye Weber. Skye is a resident at Father Alfred's. It's a long-term residential men's program. As you heard before the break, Skye is in recovery. He's 11 months clean, now working at St. Anthony's. And Skye, you just got a job as a front desk clerk at an SRO in the Tenderloin. These are basically motels where people live.
Yes, they're
right?
Like
one room, home rooms?
Well, they call them single room occupancy. Right. SRO is an abbreviation for it. I first ran into SROs in one of the programs that I was at on 6th Street. We used to take sandwiches out to the SROs, go up into the hotels and actually hand out lunches to the people. I wanted to talk a little bit about the my view of the homelessness issues, though, because I see so many different levels of it. Mm-hmm. When I was a child, homelessness to me meant somebody who lost their house in foreclosure and they wound up on the street for 6 months until they got their life back together. That's not homelessness anymore. When I first went to 6th Street, my sponsor from AA dropped me off there at the program that I went into, and he said, "Skye, maybe you need to see this." And I thought he meant I needed to see how bad I could get. And after I spent a few months there and started to serve the needy, I saw that what I needed to see was another aspect of humanity that I'd never seen before. And it is the folks that wind up living in the Tenderloin. As Lydia mentioned, there's a great deal of mental illness here. There's a lot of drug use. There's a lot of gangs. There's a lot of people that are, as she said, on the fringe, because homelessness doesn't mean you don't have a place to live. The local government has supplied a thing called GA, government assistance, that almost anyone can go into and receive funds, and you can take these funds and rent a room in an SRO. You're still basically considered homeless because you don't have enough to live on. General assistance is usually around $600-$700 a month, and you're going to spend that for your rent. So you wind up at St. Anthony's to eat. And any extra cash that you have is usually wound up spent on substance abuse. So there's so many different levels. And then there's the shelters that people live in. There's dozens of shelters in this city. A lot of them are run by the Episcopal Church. They house people for long periods. I mean, you can stay in a shelter for a year. So it's not something where you just get in, turn your life around, and get out and move on. You get stuck.
Well, and to that point, can you talk about just how difficult it is to navigate the system? Because if, let's say, for example, you're an older homeless woman with a disability, you've got to go get a number for a lottery to get in a shelter. And let's say you're having lunch at St. Anthony's and the shelter's south of Market or in the Bayview. So you have to hop on a bus and do that. And then you don't know if you're going to get the shelter. So you're running all around town with your stuff, and you're not even sure you're going to have access to the shelter that night.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's why people wind up sleeping literally on the street. Mm-hmm. But homeless people, I heard somebody say that homeless people have a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
That full-time job is standing in line. You stand in line at St. Anthony's. You stand in line at Glide. You stand in line at a shelter. Mm-hmm. You stand in line at the GA to get your check. Everywhere is stand in line and wait. There are even a group of nuns that go down to the United Nations Plaza and hand out lunches once a week. And you stand in line there. So everywhere it's either stand in line or you can't sit or lie on the sidewalk. Let's see, what do you do? You walk around a lot. And you push shopping carts, you drag your things with you. And the things that you see are it's pitiful. It's so sad. I have to share an example that I saw just last week. I left St. Anthony's working in the diner and was on my way back to Father Alfred's, which is the rehab that I'm at. And on the way, I saw a young man kneeling on a curb behind a recycle bin, a blue recycle bin. And he had his hands up near his face, and I thought he was praying. And I thought, oh, well, that's how sweet that is. And as I got closer, I realized that he was injecting himself in his neck. I walked a little bit further and I saw a young couple that looked like back in the day would have been a young hippie couple sitting on the street holding hands. And I thought, oh, how sweet. They're enjoying a moment. And I walked closer and he was injecting her in the arm. This is rampant. It is everywhere. It is an epidemic. The injection use. And I sometimes say, thank God I was just an alcoholic because I didn't deal with drugs personally. But what I see on the street, it scares me. It makes me sad. It breaks my heart. How to stop it? It's at so many different levels, and we could get it. The drug thing is a whole different subject for us.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is happening with drug use and mental illness in the city is, you know, how do we reach out to folks, and how do we respond to these crises as they arise? And one of the things that is definitely happening is this need for low barrier services for folks, that when you have folks who are living on the street who are in a place in their life where they are kneeling behind a garbage can and injecting themselves in the neck, the service that you need to be able to provide that person with the space to be able to have a conversation with you so you can get them help is very different than the space that is needed for a person who is in between jobs or a person who has access to GA. These folks are in a state of crisis, and are often derided or considered to be less than human. The people who are using injectables on the street are often referred to as bio-waste. I've heard people refer to them as human pincushions. They don't want to be approached because they carry disease. It's shameful, the response. You know, I've had conversations about rehumanizing folks, that when we talk about, like, the trauma that children experience on the streets of San Francisco, seeing people inject drugs, I would reframe that to ask the question of, is the trauma the person who's injecting drugs or our response to it? You know, when I walk with my child down the street and she's 7 years old and we see someone lying and she says, what's wrong with that person? I return, ask the question to her, what do you think is wrong with that person? And often she'll say they're sick. Okay? So now if my response as an adult is to say, get away from them, they're dirty, don't look at them, they're unclean, or this is a person who is dangerous to you, I question where the trauma is really coming from. You know, and so I beg the question of what is our response to the homeless crisis, and how do we lower the barriers to be able to accept the people who we have the most difficult time accepting because we think that they're doing something that is wrong.
Can you elaborate on that, Lydia? Because a lot of people are frustrated with what's happening in the city. And if you're on social media, there's a lot of nasty things. All you have to do is read the comments section in an article about the homeless or these issues that you bring up. What would you say to that segment? And it's a growing segment of society that's really angry, frustrated about this issue.
Well, I mean, I think that there is, you know, there's a loving practice that needs to happen here, where it's, as human beings, we have to recognize each other for our humanity and our common dignity as human beings. And that's really difficult when you're thinking of a person as another. You know, this person is not like me, this person is not like my family. But I would challenge that and to say, I would like someone to tell me that they have a family that addiction hasn't touched. That poverty has never touched. That's a very fortunate family, but it is not the majority of us. And so when we walk by someone who's on the street, really consider the fact that that might be how, if that was your daughter or your mother or your aunt or your son or your father, how would you want them responded to? You know, I mean, compassion fatigue is real. It's something that we all experience. I experience it myself sometimes. You know, there'll be days where I've had enough, you know, and I'm like, I can't take it. I mean, I can't listen to it anymore. Or I can't see it anymore. I've had experiences with people who are on the street who have severe mental illness where we've called for assistance with the city, whether it's through the fire department with the ambulance or the police or the hot team. And because this person can answer three simple questions, they're considered to be okay. And I've been told that to take them in an ambulance would be considered kidnapping. Yeah. When this is an individual who is swollen beyond recognition, unable to walk, is lying in the street half naked, yelling and screaming. And I question, I don't know that I have an answer for how to address it, but I really question the idea that because you know what day it is and who the president is and what month it is and what city you're living in, that you are in fact able to consent to refusing services. And it's a very, very complicated question because there's extremes, right? There's always a spectrum. And at one extreme, we have, you know, civil liberties, and at the other extreme, we have people who I believe are really suffering on the street who are not being taken care of.
That is Lydia Brenston, dining room manager here at St. Anthony's. We're live at St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin, and I also wanted to invite Colleen Rivica to join us. Colleen is a policy expert here at St. Anthony's, and she also works on various programs. Colleen, thank you for being here. So we've been talking about so many issues, and this is such a multi-layered, some would say complex issue. What would you add to what Lydia is saying about the extreme mental health problems on the street and how that should be dealt with?
Well, I would say that, you know, speaking as a person who has dealt with mental health issues myself, the type of mental health intervention that you would see for a homeless person is different than what you might see for a housed person. For me, I have insurance. It was a struggle for me the last time I had trouble to get an appointment with my primary care person, get an appointment with my with a specialist, get medicine checked out, all of that stuff. And I kind of went through hell for a little while. And I had a place to live and a job and enough food to eat. If you're homeless and you're dealing with mental health issues, not only do you have the issues of physically and mentally the things that are making you feel terrible, but you're also without shelter, without support, without safety, and you are going through a trauma in public where people are watching you, where people are, you know, probably telling you to go away, go somewhere else, move along, you can't be here. And so it's a difficult issue, and it really goes beyond this idea of this person needs medication or this person needs to go to the hospital. You know, I think in the city and in the state, we have, from a policy perspective, conceived of a mental health intervention for homeless people as something as basic as shelter. Because without having those really basic needs of safety met, the other types of things that are going on cognitively and physically for someone who's dealing with mental health issues is really difficult to get to that next step of recovery and health. And in the city of San Francisco right now, we've got an 800-person waiting list for single adult shelters. We've got a shelter system that's completely, that's full, that's at capacity. And according to our last homeless count, we've got 3,500 people on the street on top of those who are in the full shelter system. So not only is housing and housing with support services a need for folks who are homeless and experiencing mental illness, but shelter. Shelter is something that is very difficult to come by. And the way the system is set up now, you actually have to, even if you're in shelter for 90 days, you have to become homeless again if you want to extend your stay. So we do have some things from a policy perspective that we could change that could provide some of that basic level of stability for folks that could be a foundation for those who are homeless who do need help with mental health issues to have some stability to be able to get to a place of help.
Hmm. Sky, you wanted to jump in?
I wanted to say something, too, that seems like long-term needs to get in there someplace. The people in the Tenderloin, there is no exit sign. I've been here for 6 years, and I see the same people in the same lines 6 years later. And because I've served them, a lot of them know me by name now. So it's kind of cool to walk down 6th Street and say, "Hi, Sky, how you doing?" And these are the homeless folks that are there. And they've seen me for so long that they know me. That's nice that they know me, but I know them too. And they're still there doing the same thing, standing in the same lines 6 years later. So it's a long term. I wanted to also say that St. Anthony's does something that I think is one of their greatest things that they do, is awareness for the folks that don't know about homelessness. The volunteers that come in, and especially the kids that they bring in. They bring in groups of school kids that are sophomores in high school, and they volunteer at the diner. And when kids like that are coming from the East Bay or North Bay or down the peninsula somewhere, they come in here and they see this, and they actually work with the homeless and see it and hear the numbers and actually see the people firsthand on the street and in the diner, that's a change. They leave here with a new awareness. That is, I think, the one element that we can add to make a positive change, because you were talking about the negative comments that come out about the homelessness. And once you meet somebody and know them by name, you can't talk bad about them anymore.
Yeah, and I would like to say also that, you know, San Francisco is a notoriously generous city, generous in their hearts, generous in their compassion for people, and St. Anthony's is really an example of that generosity in the city. That this is an organization that is funded by the people of San Francisco, and we, you know, it's an expression of the gratitude of the gifts that they've been given, and wanting to share those gifts with people who need. So when I look at these comments, you know, I often feel like it's an opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity to sort of reach out to someone who, you know, every now and then I'll be sort of like going through Twitter and I'll see someone say something. And, you know, in my gut sort of wants to sort of strike back. What I tend to do is sort of say, you know, gosh, I'm sorry you feel so bad today. Because when you're that angry about something that may or may not really concern you, like it's affecting you in a way that is discomforting to you, but you're not having to live through it, I think that there's a lot of anger and fear in people when there's instability in their own lives. So, you know, I question sort of like, come and help and check out, these are people. You know, these are human beings, and these are people. And again, even like, you know, when you hear school groups, or when I toured, looked at schools, you know, you hear people say, you know, homelessness isn't just that crazy person on the street. It's also families. No, I would say that I want to embrace that person that people are not willing to embrace. And this is where we really, the work needs to be done.
Today we are live at St. Anthony's in the Tenderloin. All week on Your Call, we're doing a special series on the homeless crisis here in San Francisco. We've got about 5 minutes left with Lydia Branston, dining room manager at St. Anthony's, Colleen Rivica, policy expert here, Sky Weber. He works here. He's 11 months clean. He's in a recovery program. Barbara Coleman lives in the neighborhood, and she's an outreach specialist with the SF Department of Mental Health. We're getting a few comments. One listener says that he or she sees a lot of homeless people living in their cars, and he or she has gone to SF agencies, says, I got passed around, each giving a line about how hard it is. The manager of the mayor's housing policy, which is egregiously acronymed HOPE, had the nerve to tell me that most of the car dwellers are out-of-towners who flock here because the services are great. Where's the money going? This person writes, we're sick of hearing about the navigation centers. What else? Whenever an expensive high-rise gets built, it goes up in 5 minutes. Why can't we truly tackle this problem? Colleen, do you want to jump in on that?
I think that one of the issues is the city has been struggling to respond to this current visible encampments that we've been seeing currently, and that this has been more in the public eye, and has been struggling neighborhood by neighborhood to try to respond to the need for more shelter, to open up shelter or programs that can help shelter people in neighborhoods. So one issue is just siting, where, you know, if we make the decision to say we want to, you know, we want to be able to shelter more people, we want there to be less people on the street, it's really challenging to find a neighborhood where that type of service can be accepted. I think that, you know, another issue is this sort of push and pull that sometimes is put forward, where I don't know if we should be spending more money on shelter because we should really be spending more money on housing. Or, you know, as if there's like this seesaw where you can only spend, you know, we can only invest resources in one thing or the other. And we can't actually respond to the reality that we need more housing, and we have thousands of people that are also in need of shelter too. And so I think that sometimes these problems are set up as oppositional, mm-hmm. when really they should be looked at as complementary responses to a crisis that is leaving people unhoused and unsheltered.
And to your point, so in 2010, voters approved the sit-lie law, and Supervisor Mark Farrell just got enough signatures to place on the ballot, or he's placing this on the ballot, a measure that would amend the police code to make it illegal to place tents on a public sidewalk. This has the support of Supervisor Scott Weiner, Katie Tang, and Malia Cohen. There's also been a lot of talk about the $240 million that's equivalent to the annual budget for the Public Works Department that's going to this issue. So, and we're going to talk about these things throughout the week. What would you add to that, Lydia?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, there's long-term needs that need to be addressed. And then there's also, you know, the short-term, the right-now needs. And right now, we need housing. Right now, we need more shelters. We also need more drop-ins and area, places where people can go and where people can get help, whether that's supervised injection facilities or whether that is by having low-barrier drop-in spaces where people can really come with the issues that they have and get the assistance that they need. You know, as long as we keep sort of saying, well, we can help with this problem but not that problem unless you do this, you know, we're not really addressing the issue. If you take someone who is living on the street and is dependent on chemicals and substance abuse, and you say to that person that you have to give all of that up before we give you assistance, that's not actually addressing the issue. So how do you both reach out to people and address the issue at the same time? You have to lower the barriers.
Barbara, what would you add?
Well, the first, though, approaching the issue is, I see a lot of kids out here, too.
We're going to talk about youth tomorrow.
Yeah. I see a lot of little babies, almost. And I know them little babies, they see the needles. They see people not in so, you know, disarray, so to speak. They're sitting there. Some of them going to sleep. Some of them, you know, Mama, what are you doing, Mommy? You know, I hear this when I'm walking around on the street trying to do my outreach. And a lot of people, you know, when I approach a lady with babies, I don't need no help today. You know, I don't need no help today. Maybe it's that little thing that's sitting there telling you, you are too proud right now. But eventually, if I keep talking to her, I'll say, I know you don't want to talk today. I can feel your pain. Because I've been there. I wasn't homeless with my kids, but I know what homeless is. And I know I had to raise 3 children alone way back in the day when it wasn't a homeless thing. So when they did that, then I was saying to myself, I was saying, hey, look, you're not going to talk to me today, and I understand why you're not talking. I said, well, come here on the side. I don't want these kids to hear this. But come on aside. Tomorrow I'm going to be here at the same time, and I want you to talk to me. I'm a woman just like you, not tell me the real issue.
Barbara Coleman lives here in the Tenderloin, and she does outreach in the neighborhood with people who live in the Tenderloin. She's also a specialist with the San Francisco Department of Mental Health. Sky Weber is going to work right now to feed people here at St. Anthony's. They offer and provide 2,400 hot meals every single day at St. Anthony's. Sky is in recovery, 11 months clean. Thank you so much, Sky, for sharing your story.
Thank you, Rose.
Lydia Branston is the dining room manager here at St. Anthony's. Colleen Rivica is policy expert here at St. Anthony's. Barbara, thank you for all the work that you do. Colleen and Lydia, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for inviting us here to come to St. Anthony's to talk about these issues.
Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we continue our week-long series on the homeless crisis in San Francisco. On Tuesday, we'll be live from the Larkin Street Youth Services in the Tenderloin. Last year's census counted 1,500 children and youth who live on the streets or in shelters. From fleeing physical or sexual abuse to sex trafficking and higher rates of death, homeless youth face substantial risks. So what are the solutions to ending youth homelessness? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.